Hey, thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Visor. My name is Zane Scott with Zane Scott Media. On this podcast, we dive in and go into things beyond the racetrack with drivers, crew members, officials, and more. If you like what you hear, we are available on all the podcasting apps, as well as on Facebook at Zane Scott Media. And then you can find us on Instagram as well at Z_S_Media. This episode is brought to you by Zane Scott Media, your one-stop shop for video and more, based out of Casto, Ohio, covering the local Ohio racing scene and beyond. If you're interested in supporting the show or sponsoring the show in any manner, please reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, X, or by phone number. You can find that on our Facebook page. Hope you guys enjoy this episode, and feel free to reach out to me at any time if you have any questions or you want to be on the show. And thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy. So Zane, welcome in. Congratulations on the win at Millstream on Sunday. And then you won the night prior at Waynesfield as well. So doubling down this weekend, staying busy here. And if anyone's curious, we are recording from the Lane shop. So I came right to him. So this is mobile service. But you know, before we dive into anything else here, I asked you on the way up here if you had a quote that, you know, you used to inspire you or that you think about and all of that. And like, what was a quote that you came with?
So actually, we were coming home from Waynesfield after a big win, obviously, and we ran two cars. So me and Brett were in the one hauler by ourselves, and we were talking, and you know, everyone's congratulating us, texting us, our phones are vibrating and everything, and we got talking. We both are into sports and everything, and we talked about Kobe Bryant when he said, you know, they won two games, and he said job's not done, and they're asking him why he's not happy and everything. So I think that kind of sums up me and Brett and this whole team. You know, I think, yeah, we're happy in the moment. It's cool and great and everything. But on the way home, the reality sat in. And, you know, we still had one more race to go at Millstream, and that was a big deal for us. I really wanted to win it there. He hasn't won at Millstream. And it's kind of an iconic deal for me and him. He went with his grandpa and everything. And so it's kind of one of those quotes that, job's not done. You just got to keep going.
I mean, we kind of get lost on, you know, the realities of, you know, the racing season and, you know, those that, you know, race for a living or not doing that. Like it's not a, you know, you get to the track on a Friday or Saturday, do your races. And then, you know, you go back to the work week or whatever, you know, you're racing for a living or you're doing it full time type stuff. You know, it's get back and it's getting ready for the next one. And then you got another weekend and then, you know, there's 52 weekends in a year, and it probably seems like you're racing 53 weekends. What's that life, you know, on the road per se, like, you know, definitely first year, your first full year with, you know, Lane Racing and you know, all of that.
It's different. You know, a lot of people think when you're just a spectator, you go to the races, like you said, you're hanging out, you go home and no pressure, right? You go home, take a shower and go to bed. Not for us. Like we go home, get here to the shop, and there's still a lot of work to do. Our night just started most of the time. If you wrecked anything, you're going to tear down, you're going to get it ready for the next race. You got to wash and everything like that. So, a lot of lost sleep, that's for sure. And, but we all pitch in, and get things going, but a lot of time on the road, that's for sure. I mean, that's usually when we get a lot of our sleep and relaxation. Is kind of in the truck and trailer, going up and down the road. But, you know, Brett's done this with the All-Stars and everything, and it's stressful. You know, like you said, there's a totally different aspect of racing when you quit your job and this is your main source of income and everything, and your mindset and everything. It, all you think is race. And you're always thinking about getting better and everything. So you don't really get a rest of the mind of the racing aspect. So it's definitely a lot of wear and tear on you. And it's a lot of wear and tear on everyone really in the whole team. And it's just not us that are working, you know, Patty and Casey and everything sacrifice a lot because they don't get to see Brett as much, you know, cause he's always down here on the team and everything. So there's definitely a lot of people that put effort into it though.
Obviously you come from Indiana, so you're a little bit distant from home. And we were talking there at Fremont, you know, a week or two ago at the fair race. And, you know, I kind of, you know, I've been here before to the shop, and, you know, we did that whole Speed Week video, which was a super cool experience to do. Yeah. We got to come back here afterwards, you know, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, reading hot dogs, kind of just talking things over. And, you know, I that night you guys had slept on the floor and air mattresses and all that. And, you know, I kind of thought, you know, maybe that's just, you know, for the week since it's a whole week. But, you know, we talked at Fremont at the fair race and I was like, you know, where do you live through the season? And you were like, at the shop. And I was like, kind of like mind blown by it. Cause I'm thinking here like, oh, maybe he's staying with the Lanes or maybe he's staying with somebody like local in Fremont or whatever. And you're like, no, at the shop. And I'm like, on the air mattress. And you're like, eh, sometimes. And I'm like, where else do you sleep? And he's like, oh, sometimes I just sleep in the trailer, you know, kind of wherever I feel like sleeping at. So it was like really eye opening to me that, you know, this is like, this isn't something you come and do on the weekends or anything. Like you live here. Like we're 20 feet away, you know, right behind us. There's a shop with race cars in it and Hunter is back there right now getting ready for next weekend and stuff. And then when this is over, you're going to go in there and fill up the air mattress or whatever. And you're going to go to sleep, wake up. And it's the same thing, you know, every single day. And then you go out on the weekends, come back. You really don't get away from it. So like, I think that kind of raises, you know, in my, like my opinion or like my curiosity is like when you can't get away from it, so to say, and you know, you're waking up by it, you're seeing it. I mean, me personally, like the first thing I do when I wake up, I like to roll over and see a pretty woman next to me that I love. But it's similar here. You're rolling over and you're seeing race cars, and I guess if you love it, it works out. But how do you escape that to kind of, you know, live a life outside of racing?
We go home. Me and Hunter try to go home one or two days a week, and obviously it doesn't work out that way. I think we usually go home one or two days every couple weeks. So it's nice, but when we've got a break, like right now, you know, we're kind of week to week racing. We're not racing on a Tuesday and everything like the World Outlaws and the High Limit and everything, but actually the people we rent the shop from, they got a go-kart track out back here. And it's their go-kart season with all their buddies. So I'm usually putting all their go-karts on the scale and everything because lucky us, we got scales for it. You know, stuff like that. I think that it's, I'll go out there and we'll race around on the go-karts and beat and bang and have fun and everything. But, you know, we just, we'll hang out in the shop and watch the High Limit race. That's probably what Hunter's doing right now and drinking a beer and hanging out. I mean, you don't really get away. I mean, like I said, when you're doing it for a living, it is hard to get away. I think it's a push, and a grind all season, and your time to relax is the winter. You take those times really for granted when you do have a weekend off or whatever. But you know, July 4th, I know. Brett and Patty and Casey and everyone was down here and we played cornhole and grilled on the grill and everything and had fun. And we drank a lot of beer and did some fireworks with Casey and everything and probably spent too much money on fireworks, but we had fun. We enjoy our time differently. You know, I think all my time is usually enjoyed being competitive. I'm competitive in everything. I mean, I'll go out there with the go-karts and it's definitely competitive. Like I want to win. So I guess I'm a little different. This is my dream. So I love doing this. So it, you know, yeah, you can get burnout, but the hard times get you burnout. But when you have nights like, or weekends like this last week, and it's not too bad to wake up in the shop and it's pretty easy to get up and start working on the race car after you just, you know, won two races back to back and everything. So when it's on the highs, it makes it pretty easy to get up and work and bust your ass and do it 24/7. But definitely on the lows, it definitely takes a lot of motivation. But you know, like Brett is really good at that. Like he's very motivational. I mean, I think at 2 a.m. the other night, he sent me a couple motivational speeches and everything. He definitely keeps us pushing. You know, he's hard on us, but he knows how to get us motivated and keep us on the right frame of mind.
No, I mean, absolutely. I guess it's kind of weird I don't want to say weird, but like wild to think that like the getaway from racing is more racing. It's just not the type that, you know, you're doing to make a living and stuff. And it's, you know, it's out back with the go-karts or whatever. I mean, it's a kind of a different way, I guess, to kind of look at it or approach things and be like, hey, my getaway is really what I'm getting away from. It's just a different style where maybe the stakes aren't as high or the pressure is not as high. And I know you had mentioned this is like a dream of yours, and we'll kind of circle back to that, you know, down this podcast. But you talk about, you know, it's easy when you're riding the high. Obviously we've kind of seen throughout the year, there's been some lows. Most notably thanks to, you know, flow and all of that. We kind of saw the whole deal at Kokomo. I mean, you're railing the top, you're trying to get into, you know, one of the bigger shows of the year here locally. You know, you're one spot out, you're trying to get there. And all of a sudden, before you know it, you're basically wall riding the fence. You're doing a Logan CV, but you're not landing it on the backside. Instead, you know, you're getting out of a junked race car. It's right on the front stretch, so it's in front of everybody. And now, instead of, you know, starting the A main and having a shot to come up through the field, you're loading up a junked race car to come back here, you know, and with a tore up race car. Like, how do you wake up, you know, that Tuesday morning after you eventually go to sleep and be like, that happened, that sucks? Yeah. You know, rip the tear off and, you know, let's get ready for the next week. I mean, how do you get past something like that?
Oh man, it's a lot on the people you do it with. You know, I came back and I walk off the track and the first person I see is Hunter there. And, you know, I grew up with Hunter and everything. And I mean, he wasn't pissed. He wasn't upset at me. First thing he said, "You all right?" You know, and he goes, "You were going for it. It is what it is." I mean, and actually that was a grueling weekend for us. We, I believe we went to Attica on Friday, went to Florence, Kentucky on Saturday. Then on Sunday, we went all the way to Franklin, PA to race Tri-City and then drove through the night and went all the way to Kokomo on Monday. And it was going to be easy because it was going to be on a Tuesday and then they moved it to Monday so Kyle could do the Indy 500 practice. So it made our week definitely harder. And then I made it even harder on us. Because we had to build another car for the next following Friday. But, I mean, yes, we were all bummed out. It sucked. But my guys never once were, you know, blaming me. I mean, even though it was my fault, they weren't upset at me. And they just knew that we all needed to get our head back on the grind and build another car. So, I mean, I guess it's definitely hard. I mean, this... You can go from hero to zero really quick in this sport, but you got to be mentally tough. I mean, you got to be able to realize that there is so many times, like you've said, you know, they're going to Millstream and you're thinking there's so many people that at what point in time did you think I'm not going to make this? I've lost my talent. I can't progressively get any better. I can't race with this level. You know, there's been several times of, I'm not going to be able to do it full time. I'm just going to end up being this weekend warrior, have the blue collared type racer where I got to work 40 hours a week and go race on the weekend. But I guess I've never been able to be satisfied with not fulfilling that dream of doing it for a living. So you definitely get up and grind on that. And the people around you always help you out, obviously a lot. And I can't thank everyone, obviously, on my team and behind me, my family and everything. You know, they definitely help and push you through, for sure.
Has there ever been a moment in your career, and I'm sure there's multiple moments when you look across the whole spectrum, but has there ever been, like, one moment where you've kind of looked at it and said, this is it? Like, I'm never going to get to where I want to be. Like, my dream's over. Either, you know, you've junked a race car and the owner's upset, or... You know, you're not performing your standard. Like, what is, like, the one moment I think that stands out to you the most where you were like, this is it? Like, I'm chasing a dream, you know, that I'm never going to achieve. I always refer to it as, like, you know, chasing ghosts. Like, I see it, I run after it. Once I get there, it's not actually there. Like, what is that moment for you, or what has been that moment?
Man, I don't know. I don't know if there's been one really, really big moment. But there's been a lot of little times where I, like, in the winter, winters are so hard on racers. I mean, everyone thinks, oh man, the winter's so easy, you're relaxed, you're not racing. No, it's especially when you're a free agent and you don't have a ride and you see all the, you know, the silly season and you see all these guys getting rides and everything and getting sponsors and everything. And the list just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I mean, so, and you have no deals. Like, you don't have no one you're talking to. So you have no clue. It's stressful. I mean, I think obviously it's pretty stressful when you wad a car up or you got to perform good in the season, but 90% of the time, most owners nowadays, I feel like if you've got a good car, you're a good person, on and off the track to your team, and you do a decent job, they're probably going to keep you. And I mean, don't get me wrong. There's obviously a lot of other teams that have struggles and break up and break apart. But I think the getting the foot in the door nowadays, everyone's so loyal. If, you know, you look at Brad Sweet, he's been with Casey Kane for how long? You know, the Roth car with McFadden, you know, there for a while, everyone was shuffling in and out of that car and they landed him and he stayed in there for a couple of years. Buddy Kofoid's in there for a couple of years. So I think once you get that kind of click of everyone, it works out. So the most stressful time is definitely in the off season. I joked with Brett, the first race going to Pittsburgh, he's like, why are you so nervous? And I said, well, it sounds really, really silly. I said, but what if I lost it over the winter? And he's like, oh, whatever. You didn't lose it. You didn't lose it. But I think, you know, you're so worried that someone's going to catch up to you. You know, if you're so much better than this guy all year last year or your whole life of racing against him, is he in the off season? Did he do something? Did he find something that's going to make him better than you? So I think that's always been the biggest worry for me, is on in the off season was just finding an opportunity when I didn't have one. You know, because if you take it, if you don't get an opportunity and you have a season off, you're kind of forgotten, you know, you're only as good as your last race or performance and everything. So I think if you aren't out there performing and everyone else is, you're kind of in the back burner and out of sight, out of mind. So I think that's definitely been my biggest worry over the years, was just securing a ride and being able to showcase what I've got.
What's like the latest you've gone through the winter without a ride, and you're kind of getting up, you know, into February and the Winter Nationals are kind of, you know, kicking off a little bit and you start seeing tracks doing some, you know, local promo and they're like, hey, racing season starts in 60 days or whatever. And there's that, I can't think of her name. I'd give her a shout out if I could think of it, but she's always posting like sprint cars, whatever, with the number on the wing. That's like the days left of the racing season. Like once I start seeing that, I'm like, oh, we're getting close. Cause like you can only go so high. Like, right. There aren't many triple digit sprint cars out there to do 104 days or whatever. Yeah. Terrible example there, but 105 days or something until racing season starts. Like once I start seeing those posts every day, I'm like, oh, we're getting close. Oh, yeah. And like as a driver, if you don't have something lined up and you know those are starting to get posted or whatever, like, I mean, what's the latest you've taken that into the winter / spring without anything? And you're kind of really quiet. Like, is it ever like, is my phone ever going to ring?
So probably this year, really. You know, I think me and Brett, I kind of had a deal that was halfway working at the end of the last year and didn't really know what the plan was for this year. And we were going to try and work something out. Didn't really hear anything. And his kind of deal was kind of shaken up last minute also. And man, I don't even know when Fremont Swap Meet was. Me and him were there selling. I was selling parts off of my, you know, what I own personally and what so some of the stuff that he owned and everything. And at that point, me and him didn't, I mean, I jokingly said stuff to him, trying to kind of get him aroused and get him talking. But really at that point in time, neither of us had a plan. I've have my own car, my own motor and everything. So I guess this year I wasn't too worried because in years past I've had to start with my stuff, and kind of finish a deal out. Because of the Michigan deal, you know, GLSS and everything starts kind of at a later date. I know, like, I drove for Steve Harding. That was kind of set up right around PRI. I ran for another car up in Michigan. It was around the first of the year. So I think more of the local stuff, people don't worry about going so early. And they kind of want to see how the cards fall. But you know, like the World Outlaws and everything like that, you got to plan. You're planning, you know, they're probably finalizing deals right now and trying to keep it hush hush as long as they can. And then everything kind of comes out Charlotte time. Right. So the higher you get on the stepping stone, I feel like it's got to be earlier. So really, like the way we did it this year, it was probably the latest. And like I said, I wasn't too worried about it because I could run my own stuff and I had another opportunity, and had another couple opportunities, but ended up staying here. So, but it definitely takes a toll. You lose a lot of sleep and you're stressed out, and you're definitely scrambling and calling people, that's for sure.
Can't say I've ever been in the same shoes, but like, you know, you watch a lot of like these behind the scene documentaries, like Trevor Bauer, as controversial as he is in baseball and all of that, like you kind of watch some of those documentaries or docu-series videos that he did when, you know, he was leaving Cleveland and looking, you know, for a team, and you got like Mike Clevenger again, you know, got traded out of Cleveland. He's making these videos and it's like their idea, their mindset is like, oh, I just got to do what I got to do and someone will call or whatever. And, you know, obviously, you know, Bowers came off the Cy Young, or it was a year before a Cy Young, I believe, but like he's, you know, all-star pitcher or whatever. So like he's going to get the call, but like smaller guys are kind of just like, oh, I hope somebody calls my agent or whatever, or I get a deal. I mean, it's, you know, you try to rationalize anything like that's the same as racing, but you kind of don't get the same, you know, feeling for it. Cause it's just, it's not as high stake, you know, you're not racing for millions here. I think we all wish we could, yeah. But you're not, you know, so like the stakes don't feel as high, but the emotions themselves are just as real as, you know, MLB or NFL or all that. Like it's not any less emotionally taxing or less, you know, anxiety inducing or something like that. So I think like we really kind of lose the idea of that. And I said, when I released the podcast too, I was like, I think as like fans and spectators, and even like officials, like get so lost in this idea that race car drivers or whatever are entertainers and not human. Like they are people. They're, yeah, you know, you and I and all that. And we kind of lose that, you know, idea or reality. And it's like, oh, well, if he wanted to do whatever, he'd be better. And it's like, well, he might be doing his best as he could. I know, like before we started this podcast, we were in the shop talking, and we were like, there's guys in the past that have, you know, been the top of their game and they were winning races and they get in an accident or whatever and they come back and they're just not the same. Yeah. And you're like, man, he just ain't going to cut it. But like behind the surface, you know, beyond the visor, there's the plug. You know, they're battling something, whether it's confidence or the motor skills or slow down, like what was such muscle memories kind of vanished, or like, you know, they get the yips or something. Like it's just, they lose that, but we get so lost and be like, oh, he ain't performing. What, you know, he's just another field marker. And there's so much more than that. And I want to go back to, talked about this, like always being a dream. So obviously you come from Indiana. Like at what age did all of this start for you? Like, cause I can like look back at my childhood and I don't remember too much of it, but like my dad was already racing when I was born. I went to my first race when I was probably like 2 days old or whatever, probably 2 weeks realistically. But like, I can think about how I got into it. And then obviously, you know, I got into the media side when I lived in Texas, you know, doing music, and I was like enjoying it. And I was like, well, I'm gonna move back to Ohio. I'll just translate all this over to racing and all that. Something I was already passionate about, but like, I remember when I first got in the sport, like for you, like what age was that? Like, was it something that you were like, oh, this is cool, I got to do this? Or was it something like at first, like you resented and you're like, I don't understand the appeal of this. But then after a while you were like, I want to be like that.
No, if I would have resented it, I probably would have ended up at the fire station in the drop box. my family was all in on racing. My dad raced. My brother raced at the time. And I mean, I grew up a hellraiser. I mean, I was wide open on anything with power and any wheels. And I crash and burned a lot. And usually I had a brother that's 7 years older than me. So it was usually him wrecking me. But it was definitely my mom and dad just telling me to put some dirt on it and get back up and be a kid. And a lot of kids don't do that nowadays. And I think it was, I mean, I was so competitive. I grew up in a competitive family, really competitive. So I just always, you know, I had a Hot Wheels, we had RC cars, we did all this stuff. And I had a four wheeler. And I can tell you numerous times where I would, I mean, throw a fit and want to kill my older brother because he had a faster four wheeler. And, so I would try to wreck him so then I could beat him. But, there's just so many times like people think, oh, you just, it happened. No, it definitely crashed and burned a lot. And I think it was just, it was molded to me. I mean, my whole, like I said, my whole family was into the racing deal. So whenever I could, I don't even know, I was young. That's all I wanted to do was race. 'Cause that's all I knew. So I just think I started racing when I was four and a half, so quarter midgets. So once I did it once, I was all in. There hasn't been one moment in my life that I said, whoa, like, I don't want to race this weekend or, you know, I don't really want to go or nothing. I was always the one pushing to go, begging to go. And if we weren't racing because we didn't have the money or something, I was begging to go watch a race or something to do with racing. So it's always been in my family. You know, my dad and brother don't get to go as much anymore. My mom doesn't get to go as much anymore now that we're traveling more. And my grandma and grandpa and my aunts and uncles, they don't come as much because we're traveling more, but they definitely do like that everything's on TV now because they are always tuned in, for sure. I mean, and I will post something on Facebook and I think I don't know how to, but I guarantee you they have it on notification because they're like one of the first ones to like it and comment and share it. So I don't know. I think a lot of people that they grew up in it, you know, I don't know. There's not too many people anymore that are outside of it and get into it and are this passionate about it, you know? So I don't know. I think there's a lot of people though, like in your instance where they do take a break. I never did.
Yeah. I mean, we can kind of dive into my story, you know, a little bit. 'Cause like there was a period in time where like I was ready to walk away. Like I wanted nothing to do with the sport. The backstory is like, so like obviously, you know, I'm from this area, from Castalia or Sandusky or whatever. And all of that. And, you know, I joined the military right out of high school. I lived in North Carolina at the time. So it was 2016. I just got there in July. And the first thing I did was like, look for the nearest racetrack. And I was like, it's probably not going to be dirt. It's probably going to be asphalt. They're going to run 8 divisions a night. Like, I'm going to hate everything about it. But like, it's been like a year. Like, I got to see something. So, you know, I go there and it's this pavement track. It was Carteret County. And it's a nice facility. And I was like, oh, they put a lot of money into this place. I can get it. Sight lines are terrible, though. Like, I'll be honest. Like, they park in the infield. The stands really aren't high enough to look over anything. And the place is flat. And I went once. And I was like, oh, not bad. So I was like, I'll go again in the future. So, you know, it's like 2 weeks later. And I go. And I'm sitting there watching it. And I think it was like a super late model show or like a pro late model show. It wasn't cars or anything like that. But I'm like sitting there and they're getting ready to do the race. I think it was like 75 laps or whatever. And I have always prayed before the feature. So like you do the pray before the race or the prayer before the race, whatever. Anytime it's before the 410 or whatever, like the main event feature, I've always prayed. Like it's something I've done really since my dad's accident in 2006, as far as I can remember. But like I did that and I'm sitting there and I think I'm on my phone scrolling through and all of a sudden the green flag's out and they're racing. And you know, I'm sitting there watching whatever, checkered flag falls. I get in my truck, I go home and I'm scrolling through, I think it's Twitter. At the time it was Twitter. And I'm scrolling through it and all of a sudden it's just like prayers, prayers, thoughts, prayers, like all this stuff. And they're talking about Belleville. And I'm like, what is happening? I'm scrolling through here trying to find out. And I finally got to one and it was like prayers for Brian Clausen, you know, bad accident in Belleville or whatever and all this. And I'm like scrolling through and I'm seeing all this. And then obviously, you know, the day or two went by and nothing really came out of it. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get the notification announcement's going to be made at IMS Monday, I think it was, at like whatever. And, you know, I'm at work and, you know, like the announcement comes across and it was kind of, I think, what we all thought it was going to be at that time. But, you know, they make the announcement and I remember I got done with work and I went to my dorm room and USAC had posted the initial tribute video, like the 1.5 minute video, just music. And I'm watching it and all of a sudden it like hits me and I'm like, I was at the racetrack the night it happened and I didn't pray. Yeah. And I went down this like spiral road and I was like, I didn't pray. I felt guilty almost. Yeah. Like I was like in my head, you know, I'm like, it's not my fault. I wasn't there. Like I wasn't behind the wheel. Like I didn't do anything, but like this thing that I've been doing for 20 years, basically to that point, or not 20, I mean 10, but like I didn't do it one time. And it's like the night that the biggest name in open wheel racing, you know, gets killed in an accident. And like that happened. And I was just like, I caused this. And like right. In my head, I'm like, I'm trying to like rationalize, but not rationalize that thought process. Like I didn't pray. I caused this. If I would have prayed, this wouldn't have happened. And like, all this stuff. And it like pushed me away from the sport. Cause I was just like, I don't want to go back to a racetrack. I have zero interest in it. Like I didn't do this thing one time and this is what happens. And I was like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to go back. And not only did it like push me away from racing, but it pushed me away from my faith. And it was like this weird like period of my life where I was like, mad at God for doing this. Like it felt like punishment. And like, I wasn't super religious at the time or spiritual, but I'm a believer and I was like, you're punishing me for something. Right. Like you're punishing everybody because I didn't do one thing. And it took me a long time to get over that. And eventually I was like, you know, everyone around me is talking racing. My dad's talking racing. My friends are talking racing. I see it all on social media. I was like, I got to go back. Like, yeah. I can't, you know, it's just, it's who I am. It's like my fabric. So I go back and, you know, they're getting ready to do the feature again. And like, I was not going to let myself like not do it.
Yeah.
So I did the prayer and like everything went great. And I kind of started to feel a little bit more comfortable, but like in the back of my mind though, like I had still a lot of resentment towards things that were happening and towards God. And like, it took me really up until a year and a half ago to like get over that. Mm-hmm. And I, before my baptism, the pastor sat down with me and he's like, so tell me a little bit about, you know, your life or whatever. And I brought up that night in August and I was like, I did this and I didn't pray. And he was like, you know, it's not a punishment. It's, you know, not anything like that. Like it's a, you know, there are things in life that you can't control. And there's decisions that other people make in their life that lead to their, you know, series of events. And in no way was he saying, oh, you know, Brian made a decision that put him there, but like Brian made a decision to get in the race car and go out there and race. And I think that's like, as part of the reality of the sport that we all know that, you know, it is a dangerous sport and anything can happen at any moment and you can lose it all. But he put it that way. And it kind of like brought back to me, you know, like, it's not my fault. There was nothing I could do about it. It happens for a reason. Like, it played out the way it did. I went through that period of my life for a reason in itself. And, you know, ultimately, you know, 6 years, 7 years later, it brought me kind of into a better place with my faith. And now I look back on it, I'm like, I'm very thankful for it.
And a lot, I think a lot of people don't realize how much one scenario that has nothing to do, like you, you know, had nothing to do with you. You didn't know him. You didn't, you know, how it really affects people. You know, like me, I was 13 years old. Everywhere I went and raced to get in a sprint car at 13 or 14, my birthday's in May, so it was a little half and half deal. But my mom and dad had to sign a waiver every place we went. Well, my mom couldn't make it to everyone. My dad, I was usually with my dad. So we had a paper, and my dad signed it, my mom signed it and everything, whatever. And my mom would always be upset at all these people that, I mean, they knew I raced my whole life, and were involved in my racing, always bought shirts, whatever, you know, and were interested in it. And they were so upset because I was so young in a sprint car, and they're like, oh my gosh, people get killed in these. And, you know, like I said, my mom and dad are definitely tough people mentally, and were mentally tough on us to be tough people in life. And I will never forget this. She goes, the one guy said, I can't believe you're letting your 13-year-old kid go 130 miles an hour. And my mom goes, listen, if he dies right now, walking out, slipping on the ice out of the house, or if he's on the school bus and it gets hit by a car and he dies, and I told him he couldn't go race, he's probably going to haunt me for the rest of his life. So at least if he dies, he's doing something he loves. And people kind of thought that was weird, for her to think that. And it was kind of cruel, but it's the truth. I mean, I would have definitely shunned her if she wouldn't let me race. I mean, but I grew up my whole life getting ready for that moment. You know, I mean, obviously there was a lot of people that thought I wasn't ready. And now I feel like that's always been fuel to my fire of trying to show them and prove to them, look, I was ready and I got a jump start on all these other people. And now I'm doing it for a living. So, you know, I think that was a really tough moment for my whole, not just me, of my family and everything, of everyone questioning my mom, my dad for putting a 13, 14 year old kid that I weighed like 94 pounds. I had a 12-inch seat, you know, and everyone made fun of me that it was a baby seat and a car seat and everything. And they're getting in there and I'm racing on average 30, 40 year old guys that are grown men that are getting hurt in these. So then when that took place, you know, that was a couple years after that I started racing and everything. And all those questions started coming back. And people started being really hard on me, really hard on my mom and dad, because at that point I did have a wreck at a decent one. And I think it cracked a rib or something, you know, something minor. I mean, I wrestled and played football and everything. I cracked ribs and played football still the next Friday, you know. But people don't see that. They saw, oh my gosh, someone died of that. Well, and here again, like, my mom and dad were so mentally strong that, you know, they came back with, okay, look at all the NFL people that get all these concussions. Yeah, they don't die right now of them and everything, but later in their years after they're done with football, they don't have no memory. They're so screwed up. And it really plays a toll on your body then too. So, and I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's a decision. You know, I can choke on a glass of water or, you know, whatever. I mean, when it's your time, it's your time. And I just choose to definitely choose my time to race a race car as much as I can. And I think there's a lot, you know, I had another wreck, like we were talking in the shop, you know, I flipped in a pond, gotten a wreck and flip out of the racetrack at a place and flipped upside down in a pond and was underwater for 4.5 minutes and I couldn't get out. You know, 4.5 minutes of no oxygen is obviously not good for anyone. And it messed me up pretty good. Like I'm left-handed and I had to kind of learn how to use my left hand again. My speech was really bad. And a lot of, I didn't really lose my memory. I lost short, like my memory as around that period of time. But my mom and dad never once told me, no, you're not getting back in the car. They basically told me that, you know, we were hard on you your whole life, physically, mentally, to prepare you for things like this. And there was no doubt in my mind. I mean, I remember the call. I junked the car the next day. I had a really, really bad concussion, puking, everything. And I got a call for a guy to run a mini sprint. And I was like, yep, I'll be there tonight. And my mom was not happy. I got a call and I was told that if I left my dad's house, that she was going to murder me, basically, that I was not racing and that I was sitting there. So, and it was good. I mean, I definitely was hurting. But that's who I am. I mean, you knocked me down. I want to prove to you that you can't hold me down though. So I know that was a pretty tough one. It took a while to recuperate from that and everything. And, recently before that, I was riding a four wheeler and broke my wrist. So that kind of screwed that up again. So I had to kind of recuperate from that also at the same time and sit out for the concussion. But it never made me not want to get back in the car. It made me want to get back in that much more and prove to them, like, look, I can do this and get back in. You know, I know we were talking about kind of Rico's deal at Eldora, and it's the same thing. You know, you may not go back just as good as you were when that happened. But you know, all these guys that are out there, that's why there's tempers in this sport, right? I mean, everyone's so competitive. They're not going to settle for what being a back marker or not being, you know, you set a track record. You're not going to settle for the next time you go to that track. You're not going to be like, oh, I want to beat my track record, you know, or you are, you know, you're not going to be like, ah, oh, it's my track record, I don't want to beat it. No, you're going to be like, I want to make it better. I want to make it better. So no one else can. So I think there's definitely a lot of times that people don't understand the physical and mental part. I mean, a couple of weeks ago after Kokomo and Fremont, I kept having back problems. And I'm like, man, my back's hurting. I went, I don't know, it's been 3-4 weeks ago, and I had a couple ribs out of place. My hip was out and everything like that. And I guess you don't think about that. You know, I thought, oh, maybe it's from sleeping on the air mattresses and everything. But no, I mean, I was physically hurt. And I mean, I know talking to Van Gurley, he had a couple of ribs out and didn't even know it. And he's been racing with it. You know, it definitely plays a toll on your body, but definitely this is a blue collared sport. And there's not too many people that are going to sit out unless you absolutely make them. That's for sure.
When you're beat up, banged up, you know, physically and mentally, emotionally and all that, like, I mean, have you had a moment where you were like, I'd be okay not getting in the car this weekend?
Man, I don't know. Probably the time, like I said, when I had the concussion, I obviously thought I was Superman, and was like, no, I'll be good. And the next day I knew I was bad. I mean, like I couldn't close my eyes when I was washing my hair in the shower without falling. I mean, I was really bad. So I went to the doctor and he goes, oh, we'll sit you out 4 weeks. And I said, all right, sounds good. And I was anxious. I mean, I wanted, like, those were the longest 4 weeks. You see, you're sitting at home, and at that time it was just race monitor, and you're watching on you know that, like we said, that's when you waited 2 days and they posted it, started to post on YouTube, and 2 days later and you're like, oh my gosh, I can beat him, and they're getting like third and fourths, and you're like, oh my gosh, I could be getting on the podium, and I'm sitting here. So it was definitely hard, but we went back after 4 weeks, and I was like, dude, I don't think I can. I had to wear sunglasses all the time. My head was hurt, like if I heard a loud noise, or took my sunglasses off, my head would start pounding so bad. And I knew at that point, and you know, that was kind of after the whole BC deal, and you know, the rumors of he had a concussion the night before or a couple days before. And the worst thing to do is have a concussion on top of a concussion. And that's what led his deal. You know, that really starts to play through your mind. And I was worried. We went and got a CT scan and everything and made sure. So I definitely played that one safe. Cause that one was really bad. I mean, I remember barely, but I went on a vacation with my dad and my brother, 4 or 5 days later to the caves. And I really don't remember much of it. I mean, I remember bits and pieces, but I remember going to like Gun Town up on top of this hill, but it was like at the end of the 5 days. I mean, I don't really remember the beginning of the trip. I don't really remember going down there. So I think that kind of scared me. Because I was never that bad. I had a couple minor concussions from football or wrestling before that point, but that was like, oh my gosh, these can be serious. Like now it puts in perspective of what, when all these football players really lose everything and don't comprehend things. I was like, oh man, like I'm on that path. So it kind of made me worried, and I'm like, I don't want to make it worse to where I am like that, and then I won't be able to race. So that was probably the only time. I broke my wrist, and I was trying to figure out how to get a glove big enough to fit over my cast. I mean, and trying to convince everyone that instead of doing tear offs, do the old roll where the button's on the steering wheel and I could drive with one hand. Like, I mean, so I don't think, other than that one, there wasn't really, maybe when I was a kid, I wanted to go some birthday party or something, but I mean, I would have to say probably not. I missed two weddings this year and best friends from my whole life. They knew though. I mean, they asked me to be in their wedding and I was like, listen, like, sorry. I mean, you know, there's really never been no time where I've really said, no, I don't want to go race.
Has there ever been like someone outside of your family that has influenced any of your decision-making or kind of been like, well, I don't know if you should do that. And you maybe second guessed it, like, you know, say like a really, really good friend or like a girlfriend or whatever. Like, I mean, have you ever had that before? And you were, you know, kind of like, they're making some good points. Maybe I should listen to it.
You know, there's been a lot of people that have helped me through my life. I got out of quarter midgets, raced a mini sprint for a year, and I got to know Kevin Atkins. Him and his brother raced sprint cars and were kind of local legends of Warsaw Speedway and everything. And Kevin ran some Michigan stuff and Eldora and won a championship there in a sprint car. And he kind of persuaded my dad, you know, he needs to go sprint car racing, don't stay in a mini sprint. So I think he's always looked out for the better of me. And I grew up by Rochester, Indiana, which is, you know, the famous Gertie Engines is there and everything. And I got to know Joe Gertie and Tim Norman and all them. And Cindy Norman really well, and they really influenced me a lot. I went on the road with them when James McFadden was driving the 3G and Carson Macedo. So I'd really know. I was very lucky to be a part of their success and everything and learn from them. And, you know, there's so many people. I mean, Terry Bushy, I grew up racing with his grandkid when he had quarter midgets for his grandkid and ended up getting able to, you know, race for him for a couple of years. And there's just so many people that, you know, Steve Harding helped me along a lot in my racing career. And you know, Lauren Dalrymple, I raced for him and worked for him. He gave me a job when I was, between my freshman and sophomore year and summer, I worked for him. And right out of high school, I lived at his house and worked for him and everything at his cooling and heating company. So there's definitely a lot of people that have helped me out through my life and told me, hey, that you probably shouldn't do that or you need to do this a little better. And, you know, I've known Brett for a very short time and I think I've known him probably 3 years. I ran the Jim Ford for him 3 years ago and we've got really close. I mean, there's been a lot of times where I wasn't even around. I wasn't in the same state. I was out in South Dakota or whatever doing something. And he's like, hey, you probably shouldn't be out partying or whatever. And you need to be at the shop working on the car. And even though I said, oh, we were there all day, he said, nah, you probably need to be at the shop. You need to put more hours in. If you really want to do this for a living, you need to be there. So, I mean, he's definitely done a lot for me. You know, like Joe Swanson, he did a lot for me when I was kind of my turning point. You know, everyone, you're 19 to 21 years old and, you know, you think you're invincible and you can do everything and you're kind of cocky. You turn 21 and you can drink and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go party and all my friends are doing it. And, you know, he was kind of like, I think you can go party, but a different kind of party. You can go party at the racetrack. Like, we're going to go race and if you win or something, then we can have a few beers stuff like that. But you need to be focused. So they did a lot for me of keeping focus. And like I said, I mean, obviously my mom and dad were always really good at doing that. And my whole family was, but you know, I think there was a lot of people. I mean, there's so many people that I couldn't, there's a lot of people that I couldn't even name them all. And I know I'm forgetting a lot of them. That helped me kind of guide through my life and get me to where I'm at right now. Even, you know, like you said, there's so many people outside of the racing community, that you can take things in life that help you in the racing community also. So there's definitely a lot of people out there.
Yeah. You brought up the party scene and it's like, I feel like I relate to that a lot because I looked at, like, you know, when I lived in Texas, like, I've never been a big party or whatever. And I was kind of always just like very to myself. Like, I've never really been a big drinker. And like right now I don't drink. But I you know, I look at my time in Texas and it all started. I went to a acoustic concert at a craft brewery. Just because I wanted to hear, you know, the artist play. And I had met, you know, a guy there and his name's Miller and he's, no, we don't talk much now. Obviously, I'm not there, but I mean, one of my best friends, and you know, he introduced me to the music scene, and then I met, you know, a couple girls through him, and you know, I ended up dating the one, and I just felt like I was spending so much time partying, and it was, you know, maybe not like the college parties that you see in like Project X, like no one was jumping off roofs into a pool and all that, but you're just constantly at the bar and constantly drinking and. I look back at it now and I was like, that's the most miserable that I've ever been in my life. And I never knew it. Like, I wasn't watching races on the weekend like I wanted to. I was big into rodeo at the time. I wasn't even get to watch rodeos. Mm-hmm. And it just like wore me down. And I felt so disconnected from everything. And I felt like my mental health, or like me as a person, was suffering from it so bad. And it was like, I, you know, gotta get an escape from this. Like, I gotta get out of this somehow or another. And, you know, I finally, you know, was doing the photography side for the music scene, and I got with this band, and they were super, you know, laid back, and they weren't big, you know, huge partiers or whatever. And it, for like the first time, I was like really able to focus on my craft. And like, I look now and like, I post videos or, you know, whatever, on the social media pages, and I look at it, I'm like, well, that video is terrible. Like, that sucks. Like, mm-hmm. I could do so much better. But like, at that time when I was partying, I was just like, oh, this is the best I can do, and, you know, whatever. Yeah. And like, once I got clear headed and was out of the partying scene, I was really focusing on my craft. I was finding all the things that I wasn't doing, right. Like very minimal things, like changing one slider from 10 to 12 makes all the difference or whatever, or like shooting in this setting. And it was just, I mean, it was eye opening. And like, you know, for the first time ever, like in the last year, I've really learned like that's a legitimate thing. Like, if you're partying all the time and, you know, all you care about is having a good time after the races and drinking, and like, you're never going to be where you want to be. And I feel like you're always going to be chasing after, you know, like I said earlier, like chasing ghosts. Like, you're just, you're going to be reaching out for something that's never going to be attainable because you're not putting yourself in a position to get there in the first place. And I look at the partying scene and I'm just like, you know, it's fun while you're in it. But like, when the party's over, like, was it really worth it? Like, are you better as a person? Are you? And it's like, if just someone close to you could pull you out and just shake you around and be like, wake up. You have so much potential and you're not realizing it. And you just paid attention, like all this stuff. And it's like, I go back now and I look and I'm like, all it took for me to get into this media scene now with racing and where I'm at and be like, I feel like I'm producing somewhat decent quality content with someone to believe in me.
Yeah.
And you know, and we talked about that at the fair race about some of the things going on or whatever, but it was like, you know, I dated this girl and her mom and her were so supportive of everything I was doing. And like, I know that like, they don't have any interest in it. Like, they're not big on social media. Like, I mean, very, very to themselves, but they were very supportive of everything I did. And I was like, you know, at the time, I don't think I appreciated it for what it is. And like, now, obviously, after the fact, and like, I look back on it and I'm like, you know, that was like the support that I needed to get going, get my feet on the ground and, you know, not take off running, but walk. And like, now I feel like I'm at a point where I'm running.
Yeah.
And you know, the podcast came to mind and like, I feel like I'm running and I probably should still probably be crawling because I'm going to get so far ahead of myself. Yeah. But like, it's just like, all it took for me was one person to believe and one person to support me in like everything after that came. I want to say easy, but it came a lot easier. Or if it was hard, I knew that if I ever wanted to throw in the towel that I would have someone to like be there and support me and all that. And I mean, that's just so important in life. You just need people to support you and be in your corner and believe. And, I think it's so easy for a lot of us to get lost in this idea of like, we fail once, we're just going to do nothing but fail. And there's a quote, and it's so cliche for me to say this. And I know anyone that listens is going to be like, well, I didn't know he listened to that person. Cause I mean, it's such, you know, she speaks to women more than anybody, but her name's a closet poet. And she records all these poems from her closet. And one of them, she talks and she's like, what if it all went right? It's so good to hear and like try to have that mindset. Cause I think we get so focused on what if it goes wrong? You know, if I throw this slider here, if I make this decision here, what if it doesn't go right? What if, you know, I junk a race car or worse, like this is it. This is the last time I ever, you know, get to have another breath on this earth. And it's like, but what if it goes right? What if you throw the slider? What if you hit that line? Like, no one's around the top and you hit the top and it's perfect and you shoot. Like, what if it goes right and all of a sudden you're winning? Like, and I think if it goes right, it's so easy to say, oh, it's blah, blah. But if it goes wrong, it's so easy to be like, eh. And I think that like, if we just were to think, what if it all goes right from the start? I think we'd find ourselves in so much better and successful positions because we're just naturally going to gravitate, you know, towards those things.
So it's pretty, my dad always, has always kind of told me, it sucks getting second. And we've got second a lot this year. And he's always told me, you know, whenever whenever I get second or third, I'm probably not very happy. If I get fourth, whatever. But if I got second or third, I'm usually like, especially second, I'm not a happy camper because you're that close, obviously, and you want it that bad. But he always said, you know, just keep putting yourself in position and the time will come. I mean, and like this weekend, you know, that's literally what he texted me after after Friday, you know, got wrecked and I was pretty discouraged. And he goes, you just got to keep putting yourself in position. You guys have been doing that. It'll come. It'll come. So then we win Saturday and he texts me that and we win Sunday and he goes, I'm telling you, this is your time. And, you know, I think he also told me this, you know, we went through a stretch like we were talking earlier that it was not very good. We were wrecking. We were getting wrecked. We had terrible luck on the redraw. I mean, just we had. You know, a box go bad at Sharon one night. I mean, just things that weren't going our way. And I was getting pretty discouraged, and upset. And he said, you know, nights like these make the one night that is good that much better. Kind of like you said, you know, if everything went right, if everything went as planned, you know, people wouldn't value those nights of winning a race on a last lap at Waynesfield like that. You know, if I won every night, it would have just been another win, you know? And you wouldn't have been excited. You wouldn't have been up on the top wing, you know, pumping your chest, pumping your fist up in the air. It's the nights of the grueling up and down the road, the ribs out of place, the sleeping on air mattresses, you know, the eating McDonald's because that's the only place open at 2 a.m. going down the road. You know, people don't see that, but that inside makes you feel so good that you sacrificed all that stuff and you finally got up on this top step. So I think that's a lot of the people, you know, like you said, you know, beyond the visor, that's is cool that you're doing because a lot of people don't understand that. You know, I think they think, oh, yeah, you just go up and down the road. You know, they're eating concession stand food and they're going home, taking a shower and laying in their own bed or going to a hotel. And they don't understand that, you know, they get up the next day and they go eat lunch. They get up at 9, 10 o'clock because they were out late or, you know, whatever. And these guys up and down the road, they're getting up at they go to bed at 3, 4 a.m. and they're back up at 6, 7 a.m. and they're outside in the blistering heat and working on the race car for the next night. And you know, yeah, a lot of people, oh, you're not working a 40-hour week job, but if you break it down, you're working 40 to 60 hours in a week. And instead of 5 days, it might be 3 days. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, you're 6 o'clock till 4 or 5 a.m. the next day. I mean, so, and it's not like you're just hanging out, you know? So I think the aspect of things, people of you talking to different people and them telling experiences and everything that goes on is pretty cool because the fans can relate to it more, and be more personable with people, you know. Some people might not come up to me because they don't think I'm personable or they're nervous to or whatever. And that's definitely not the case. I mean, if any fan wants to come up and talk about how blue the sky is, I'll talk about how blue the sky is. I mean, it don't matter to me. I mean, some guys, they really focus. And I think one thing that was really hard for Brett is, I'll be sitting there laughing and joking and having fun. While I'm strapping in the car before we can be starting on the front row of the Knoxville Nationals and I'm going to be having fun. I mean, and I think at the beginning of the year, Brett was usually, if anyone knows Brett Lane, he's usually pretty uptight and focused. And not saying that I'm not, but, it keeps me in the right frame of mind. And I think he's helped me a lot. Of kind of relaxing on some things that I've been nervous on. And I think I've really helped him a lot. I mean, we get to the racetrack and we'll sit there and joke and laugh. And usually, here recently, every time I've been getting in the race car, he's usually made fun of me or said some things that definitely can't say on air. But he's definitely made it a lot of fun and kept my mind off things. Even when I might be a little nervous about something, he'll make a joke or something when I'm getting in or give me a little confidence boost. So, and Hunter does too, you know, every time, I think in one of your video for Speed Week, we roll out there and he gives me a fist bump and it never fails. He's always got a catchy saying to say to me, and usually it's do something cool. And you know, I was actually going to post something today. We won at Millstream and I get on the wing, do a wing dance, and I come down and he gives me a fist bump. And then he goes, "All right, you did something pretty cool," you know, and like for me and him, that's, you know, I feel like that's something I'll never forget. You know, right before I left, he gives me a fist bump. He goes, "Yeah, all right." And I said, "I don't know. Are we good? I don't know." And he goes, "Well, I don't know, but do something cool." Like, rides away on the four wheeler. You know, we're both laughing and we rip the top and we win. And he's like, "All right, that was cool." So, you know, it's things like that people don't see of that's joy for us, for me and him, of being able to laugh about that time, you know, when we're 40, 50 years old or, you know, hell, on our deathbed. We can have a laugh at that. And so, like you said earlier, we're just people. I mean, everyone's just a normal person. We all put our pants on the same way. We all put our sweatshirts and shirts and underwear on the same way. And even though some people might act like, you know, that they do it differently, they don't. I mean, so a lot of the local guys though will talk to you. So, and I think it's cool. Like I said, you're trying to give back to the racing community by doing this. And I feel like between the people that think the racers are racers, you know, and they're not normal people and they're robots, like they aren't. And this might get the fans closer to the racers and the teams and everything. And hopefully if it helps one or two people this weekend on this podcast come up to me and say, "Hey man, that was pretty cool. You know, I really like what you guys are doing and it made me laugh or made me smile." You know, maybe they had a bad day at work or whatever and they watched this and they smile and laugh, then we did a good job.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think that's, you know, really what the goal ultimately is just to kind of, I just want to bring that side out. And it's something that we lose so often in sports because, you know, we just kind of look as entertainers, athletes, you know, they're here for us. And I will, you know, I've always advocated the fans are the most important part. Ultimately, yeah, the racers are trying to entertain the fans and all that. And 100%, you know, I still believe in that idea because, I mean, that's what makes the sport work. But there are people still at the end of the day. And I think if we can bring those stories out or, you know, bring some of the things out, it'll help.
And I think that's, a lot of people don't understand that. And like I said, this, I think hopefully you doing the podcast and the social media nowadays helps a lot of that. And maybe people are more aware of it. And really you don't have to be in the scene of the racing. You don't have to be at the races. You don't have to be interacting with the racers as much nowadays to get to know the racers really personally. You know, I mean, I like recently I've got into golfing and I got to thank Max Stamball for that. I liked golfing. I went with my aunt a couple times and Max has always been wanting me to go. And I was terrible. And usually it was because I'm so competitive. I never grew up golfing a lot. And it's obviously hard sport to learn and everything. I played baseball, so it's really hard to correlate those to get together. But I've gotten better and everything at that. You know, if I wouldn't have said this on there, there's probably a lot of people out there that would have came up to me and talked racing with me. Now I might have five people come up and say, "Hey, you know, do you go golfing recently? What's your best score? Or have you gone golfing here? Have you gone?" Like, so, but yeah, I mean, I think just things like that. I mean, I think that, you know, it's always funny. Like the thing with our team is top fives, we go to Denny's. Around here, there's nothing open for food. There's Frickers and Denny's, and you can only eat so much burgers and chicken wings and everything so much. So, we kind of always had a funny thing going around with all our team and my family and his family and everything that top five finishes, we all go to Denny's and eat, cause we're always hungry and Taco Bell and McDonald's gets boring. So, everyone liked that and we all made fun of that and everything. So it's just things like that where you kind of learn more about people on the social media side. And I think, like you said, the flow is doing a pretty good job. Obviously NOS just came out with their kind of episode deal. But they don't get really personal. Like you said, you know, they kind of stay on the racing deal. And like we talked, if you're already involved, if people are going to watch this, they already know what we're doing at the racetrack. They know we're racing. They know how we did. They know our lap time, you know, they know if we flipped, they know if we did good. So it's cool to give them another look of all the racers and the people in the racing community.